podcast is part of the Batman Universe Podcast Network, hosted by thebatmanuniverse.net. Here, we love talking about everything Batman. Thebatmanuniverse.net has news, original content, and reviews about Batman comics, movies, TV shows, video games, and more. Check out thebatmanuniverse.net and join our Discord server to start chatting with fellow fans. We can't wait to talk to you guys. Also, visit our Patreon page and join our other awesome supporters. But enough of this nonsense. On with the show.
Gotham City, like any other large metropolis, abounds in girls of all shapes and sizes. Debutantes, nurses, stenographers, and librarians.
Gotham City Library, Miss Gordon speaking.
Lopez hair removal. This is Jose.
Holy transformation. 1 minute, plain Barbara Gordon, librarian and Commissioner Gordon's daughter. And the next minute, something new has been added. Batgirl, modeled after her idol, Batman.
Holy apparition!
No, Boy Wonder, I'm Batgirl. You are no longer alone, Caped Crusaders.
It took me 3 years to track down the Jade Gatto, and 3 more to figure out how to steal it.
Funny, it only took me 10 minutes to figure out how to snatch it back.
No matter how you do it, crime doesn't pay, girls.
Mihi nomen est Stella, ad hoc est Batgirl to Oracle, the Barbara Gordon podcast, episode 253 for December MMXXIV and the 15th anniversary. So we are getting to those triple teens. I guess this is like the quinceañera. And yeah, we'll see what happens with the Sweet 16, but hopefully it'll be okay this year and it won't be too traumatic and angsty. Batgirl the Oracle is brought to you by MileHighComics.com, your new and collectible comic book store. Mile High Comics has an inventory of over 5 million comics from the gold, silver, bronze, and modern age, and over 100,000 trade paperbacks. If you're not into the vintage stock, Mile High Comics also has a subscription service called the New Issue Comics Express, offering a discounted price for comics ready to hit the shelves. So if you're looking for vintage back issues or a great modern subscription service, be sure to check out milehighcomics.com. So since this is the 15th anniversary and it's December, so it's really the end of 2024, as has become my custom, I'm going to give my favorites or my number one, my tops of 2024 as we transition into 2025. So the first half of this episode will be my favorites of this year, and then the second half will be reviewing the latest Batgirl issue and the latest Birds of Prey issue. So that's what you have in store. And the intro music, in case you were interested, is Heavy as a Crown from Arcane Season 2. So if you didn't hear it and you're interested in what that sounds like, then go there and then you'll find out what the Zias's Radio Hour will be, because that's based off of my number one song for 2024. And if you heard it, great. And if you didn't, then maybe seek it out. And if you're interested, since you may not hear it because of, you know, Spotify and other things slapping me down and my creativity. So here we go. So starting off with video games. And I feel like even though I consistently play a video game at least Wednesday, maybe sometimes Wednesday and Saturday with my good friend Harry, I was trying to think of ones that would be new that I was playing. And the new ones that I've played this year were Stray, Resident Evil 4, the remake, and slowly but surely the Dead Space remake, which I got for free because of being a PlayStation Plus subscriber. So I'm thankful for that. And I think of those three, that Stray was probably my favorite just because it certainly was a, for the most part, a comfort game, something fun to play. It's great to play as a cat, a nice little puzzler as well as platformer. It was stressful with the Zergs, but also being in this unique environment and figuring out what this world was like was great. And yeah, it was just like a fun game and something to bring joy to your life if you had anxiety. So I very much enjoyed that. I enjoyed Resident Evil 4. I can understand why it has such, people have such high opinion of it and it's so laudable, but I don't know, Resident Evil 2, that remake, and it might be because it's the first one that I had played officially, even though I had seen other things. But I just love that one so much. I think a huge reason is because I love Claire Redfield, really fell in love with that particular character. And I love Leon, but it's fun to see him, you know, as this rookie cop in that sort of situation. And I felt like it really had that survivor horror aspect of it, whereas RE4, which I know it's well known for this and people like it, is so like just so much waves of enemies that it can become frustrating and overwhelming. And I like this strategy of, you know, really conserving your ammo and being spooked, where I feel like you get that with Resident Evil 2 rather than 4. I'm interested to see what they're doing next. It might be Code Veronica, in which case my girl will be back, which will be fun. But yeah, I think Stray is my top. I'm enjoying, I guess if I use that word, Dead Space, but it's, I think I've only done either two or three chapters because it just takes a lot for me to, I'm kind of an emotion or like a feeling player, like, am I feeling playing this? And it's just hard because I just know what I'm getting myself into and it's just makes me uncomfortable. But I can't, I have two other games. I really want to play The Last of Us Part 1 for the PS5 and then The Last of Us Part 2 for the PS5. So, but I'm not allowing myself to do that until I finish Dead Space. So I really need to finish it, which I think I've got in the next week, just exam. So really low work for me. So I think it'll be, if I have this bad thing about when I say I'm going to play Dead Space, I end up not doing it. But I hope that next week I'm just playing Dead Space and I finish it. So fingers crossed. So move on to comic book. And this is a bit of a stretch, if only because when I think of comic book, I think of, you know, single issues, but I could just change it to graphic novel in this case. And I think it's going to be Genderqueer by Maya Kababe. And this was something that Tom and I talked about over at Required Reading. And I just really enjoyed this memoir. Of course, it's highly controversial and it's one of the most banned or challenged books out there, but learning more about this through someone who has lived it was great. Learning more about the pronouns E, M, and air was also interesting. That was the first time that I had any experience with that. And then, yeah, just certain episodes that she had her vignettes that, sorry, that E had certain vignettes and things like that really spoke to me, and highly, highly recommend that. And I think that it is not worth its controversy. I think it just proves, you know, that people are fearing what they don't understand and they're trying to, I guess, erase existing people off this planet. But I think that it's it deserves to be here. And I would say, yeah, definitely give it a shot. So moving from a graphic novel to a book, and I have a top book and then a top romance novel, because if you recall, 2024 was really, I think, where I lost my mind with romance and smut, and joined, you know, Kindle Unlimited and just pounding them away. So Donovan actually for my birthday got me a shirt that says, has books on it. And it says, at this point, it's a spice rack, which I love that shirt. And it's so clever. And luckily, I'm not buying all those books, but I do have a smut corner, and two of my friends got me an illuminated sign that says smut, and it popped, it's purple, and I love that little corner so much. But before the smut, my top book, which I've read some good ones, but I'm going to go with The Iliad by Homer, translated by Emily Wilson. And you might know what The Iliad is, but it is one of the foremost achievements in Western literature. Homer's Iliad tells the story of the darkest episode of the Trojan War. At its center is Achilles, the greatest warrior champion of the Greeks, and his conflict with his leader, Agamemnon. Interwoven in the tragic sequence of events are powerfully moving descriptions of the ebb and flow of battle, the besieged city of Ilium, the feud between the gods, and the fate of mortals. Beautifully rendered in English. And I, you know, some books are like, can I recommend this to everyone? And obviously this is a relationship with this, you know, tome, and you're going to have to put time aside and mental energy aside. I think it's well worth it for everyone to maybe read the Iliad one time, the Odyssey one time, the Aeneid one time. And obviously I'm biased because I'm a classicist, but if I were to choose a translation, it would be Emily Wilson's. And you can, if you're interested hearing me talk about it, you can have the brief example of me talking about it with Tom over at Required Reading, or you can go to Dear Reader and see me talk about it broken up in two episodes and then different adaptations based off of it. And then my favorite smut book or my favorite romance of this year, I think was, there are some great ones, but The Graham Effect by Al Kennedy. And I, of course, have read all of these. So this is like the third series in this universe of hockey players and their families and friends. Gigi Graham has exactly three goals: qualify for the women's national hockey team, win Olympic gold, and step out of her famous father's shadow. And her father is the main male character in the very first book of all the series by Al Kennedy. So far, so good, except for two little things. Fine, a little thing and a big grumpy thing. She needs to improve her game behind the net, and she needs help from Luke Ryder. Ryder is 6'5", built, opinionated, rude, and sexy as hell. But he's still the enemy. Breyer's new hockey co-captain has his reasons, though. The men's team just merged with a rival program, leaving Ryder with an angry roster where everyone hates one another. There's guts. To make matters worse, the summer coaching spot he's angling for with legendary Garrett Graham is out of reach after he makes the worst possible first impression on his hero. So really, this compromise with Gigi is win-win. He helps her make the national team. She puts in a good word with her dad. The only potential snag? This bone-deep, body-numbing, mind-spinning chemistry they're trying to ignore. It's a dangerous game they're playing, but the risks just might be worth it. Yeah, highly recommend. It was really good. And moving on to anime / animation, it's going to be Arcane. It is going to be Arcane. And shout out to loyal listener Jaime, because he was really like pushing this for at least a year, if not more, because there's certainly a gap between season one and season two. And I just never had jumped on board. He was talking about Vi and all of this. And then I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a go and see how it is. And just immediately fell in love with it. I feel like it's almost Across the Spider-Verse on steroids, which is nuts, because Across the Spider-Verse is amazing and an art form and so deep by itself that to say that Arcane is a step up is a bit nuts. But I feel like Arcane is an art as well, not only with the different animation styles, but the depth of its storytelling and tackling some really interesting storylines. And everything that happens, everything that is seen has a particular purpose. If you're not aware what Arcane is, the blurb is: amidst the escalating unrest between the rich utopian city of Piltover and the seedy, oppressed underbelly of Zaun, sisters Vi and Powder find themselves embroiled in a developing conflict over clashing convictions and arcane technologies. And they call this kind of like a steampunk-esque TV show, which you can kind of see with the designs and everything. There are definitely multiple shippers, or multiple ships, I guess I should say. I know they primarily, people are calling it Kate Vi, but it's so awkward that I feel like Violin should have been the thing. And then later on, Echo Powder, which that episode by itself, my gosh. And yeah, season two, I think, really puts you through the emotional ringer in multiple ways. But I wrote, thank you to Jaime for this recommendation. And I recommend it as well. I'm actually doing a rewatch, but taking my time with it and just doing one episode an evening and really digesting everything again. And now when you see also like a whole show, because this was it, seasons one and two, so the story is finished with these particular characters, then to go back and recognize, oh, the details and how it might connect back. And now I'm kind of also on, it's like a steep descent, because now like the merchandise, I got a sweatshirt that has Vi on it. I've got a button with Jinx. I've got a couple stickers that I'll put on my laptop, considering a poster that I might frame and put in the kitchen, because there's kind of this blank wall that I want to do something with. And then got some Funko Pops that, fingers crossed, I'll get. But man, those things go out of stock quickly. So now it's like a slippery slope with this and merchandise and everything. But yeah, it's really good. So I highly recommend. Move on to music. So this album is, I was thinking about it as I was driving today, that because there's no Ali and AJ album, that's usually the one that takes the place of this. But this was a great album. This is I Love You So Effing Much from Glass Animals. This is their fourth studio album. They are an English indie rock band. I did not like them in the beginning. So this is very much an example of over time, maybe developing an appreciation for a band. I felt like when I was hearing different things like Gooey and trying to think of what other initial singles that they had out, that I just felt like it's the same thing over and over again. Like their sound just sounded the same. And I think to a certain extent, like I still hear similarities between their songs, but this was such a great album. And I think I started transitioning from my dislike of them to appreciation with their Heat Waves in 2020, and started, you know, thinking a bit more about them and giving them a better try. The album was partly inspired by the success of Heat Waves in 2020, with the frontman Dave Bailey saying that sometimes you aren't able to change as quickly on a personal level. He explained that success can leave one feeling like a spectator with accompanying expectations to act a certain way, which confused him to the point of not knowing who he was or if anything was real. The title is about power and mystery of human connection in a universe that may make us feel overwhelmingly small. Bailey also explained that the lead single, Creatures in Heaven, is about a moment in time having the capacity to be enormously formative and life-changing. There you go. So yeah, I would say give that a go. Either the whole album or maybe some singles from it, I think would be great. And my song of the year, which is not from that album, is Pretty Vicious by The Struts. And it definitely has a feel of Wicked Game by Chris Isaak. But yeah, I don't know. It's just like so catchy. And I like the idea of this woman who has this power. She knows she has this power. She knows she's hot. She knows that she's capable and independent. Like, I think she's like a girl boss. And she doesn't necessarily flaunt it, but she is so, I think, confident in herself. But this, of course, can come across as like, yeah, she's just like dismissive of other people and she's unaffected by these guys and they're just like falling over themselves and also getting heartbroken. And yeah, I just think it's a pretty cool song. And that's what you will either hear or not hear for Zias's Radio Hour. And it's one of those long, like I miss longer songs. I feel like the previous, yeah, so this one and then last year is both longer songs. And I miss those. I miss where you just had long plays. And I thought about that with some of the initial Silver Sun Pickup albums where, you know, those are like 6 minute songs. And yeah, so Pretty Vicious, a bit longer, but I think a pretty cool song. For TV series, my number one, and then I've got some honorable mentions, is Shogun. And I know I'm kind of late to the game. That might technically be 2023, but this was amazing, a sweeping epic. I loved the characters. I especially loved Mariko-sama. She was amazing. The actress playing her was amazing. Well deserved all of the Emmys that that show and those actors received. And yeah, it was a sight to behold. And I don't know that they necessarily need a second season. I feel like that's kind of a money thing. I wish, kind of like Arcane, which I know it spent over $250 million for both of these seasons, but knowing when you're ending, I think is lovely. Like, let's not just push it because you want money. And Shogun is so beautiful in what they're doing that I feel like let's just stop right there. So yeah, highly recommend Shogun if you have not already. For honorable mentions, I would say Feud, Capote versus the Swans. Really interesting story based on facts, obviously. An amazing cast. Time-wise, I like being transported in that particular time, 50s, 60s, that sort of thing. Echo from Disney. Probably my favorite thing that Disney has done, representation-wise, having a different group being focused on loving those characters. I thought that that was just really well done. Maxton Hall is amazing, and I kind of want to rewatch that. I feel like it'll happen. I know there's this another season coming out, but a definitely like a bully, or at least enemies to lovers. Highly recommend that particular show. And then Under the Bridge, which another true story, interesting story, a sad story. And again, yeah, great actresses leading that. So those are all my honorable mentions. I don't think I have a specific TV episode, nothing. And I'm sure when I was watching these that something stood out at me, but it's harder now. I mean, I make a list of movies and TV that I have seen throughout the year, but once you get to episode specific things, my mind is basically, it's too much. There are too many apples in there. So we'll move on to movie. I think we've got three. I'll say that there's not a number one with honorable mentions, but I think my top number one times three. So Alien Romulus, which came out 2024, six downtrodden young space colonists who encounter hostile creatures while scavenging a derelict space station. I mean, what do you need? But this was like, there's so much hope that I was resting on this film to be good, especially after Prey. And it met and I think exceeded expectations. Saw it with Harry. Harry came down and we watched it together. And then I waited a couple weeks and then saw it again. Just so good. And I know there's a sequel that has been announced. I'm not sure what that's going to be like. I don't know if it should exist or not. And then the TV show, you know, it's like, oh, there's been so many things with this TV show. So we need to hold on to Alien Romulus and have that be our joy, because we've been, you know, disappointed, I think, as Alien and Predator fans, that Alien Romulus and Prey have really set the bar. A French film that came out in 2023, but I watched in 2024 in preparation for the Oscars, Anatomy of a Fall, which stars Sandra Hüller as a writer trying to prove her innocence in her husband's death. And this, wow. Yeah. The acting, the story itself seems so simple, but just really powerful. And the son, amazing in his delivery, and getting to understand the French court of law, because a large portion happens then, is, yeah, it was a great film and highly recommend, or highly deserved its Academy Award nominations. And then finally, Civil War, which also came out in 2024. The plot follows a team of war journalists traveling from New York City to Washington, D.C. during a civil war fought across the United States between a despotic federal government and secessionist movements to interview the president before rebels take the capital city. That was a weird phrase. So the journalists are going to D.C. to interview the president, and this war is between the federal government and secessionist movements. Scary, angst inducing, but yeah, I think in the words of Harry's father. And yeah, highly recommend that one as well. I mean, all I can say is, like, I highly recommend these films. I think the Civil War, I think, is becoming ever more relevant. I mean, it is definitely like in the way of A Handmaid's Tale, where it is realistic fiction. This is certainly realistic fiction, or something based off of a potential future that, you know, could happen. So there you go. The best bad movie or TV show, which last time was, of course, My Fault. Still waiting for the next one. I just finished. I wasn't going to have one, but then I watched Tell Me Lies on Hulu, which is set in the late 2000s at a fictional upstate New York school called Baird College. And it chronicles a turbulent romance between college freshman Lucy Albright and college junior Stephen DeMarco over the course of 8 years. So it's both 2008 and then 2015. It kind of shifts back and forth, but mostly in 2008. Using the words turbulent romance is like, it doesn't even scratch the surface. This is perhaps one of the worst things I've ever seen. I mean, it's super entertaining, but in terms of how people are acting, and I love Cruel Intentions. Like, that's one of my, I shouldn't like this, but I do like this kind of film because of how badly people act. But this is the worst I think I've ever seen people, with the exception of maybe reality television. But it's so toxic. And then if I Google something about it, you know, and a Reddit might pop up, people saying, I think it was also on IMDb, people saying, I relate to this story so much, which makes me worried for that person. But I guess it might be cathartic for them to be on the outside and looking in and also realizing like, oh, wow, isn't that type of relationship? I mean, give it a go. I think you'll figure out very quickly what Lucy and Stephen are like. Both are awful. Both are the worst. There are some people you can kind of hold out hope for, but it starts to dwindle as the series goes on because you think like, oh, this person's okay. And then they make a poor choice. And I'll also say that there's a lot of sex, which I don't know if this was a way to titillate and excite people and maybe have it be popular enough to have a second season. I don't know. It's almost like it's too much, I would say. I guess, you know, college students be colleging, but definitely that. Sports. I don't have anything huge, but I will say Josh Allen, whom I love. He seems like a great guy. He seems kind and sweet. Funnily enough, he is engaged to the voice actress of Vi, Haley Steinfeld. But anyways, Josh Allen, QB of the Buffalo Bills, they're doing so well. I think they are 10-3. And I'm just hoping, I mean, they beat the Chiefs in regular season, but I just need the Bills to make it to the playoffs, which they normally do. Knock on wood. They have been for the past couple of years. But we need a Super Bowl win. I want them to win the Super Bowl so badly before I die. Will this year be the year? Definitely a Christmas gift that I would like, but I'll probably just need to purchase it myself as an official Josh Allen jersey that I would love to wear it. I'd love to wear it to school because, you know, I don't give a you-know-what that I'm in a Baltimore Ravens thing. I actually wore my Buffalo Bills hat to school yesterday because I was like, you know what? I'm one of those people that doesn't care, number one, kind of wants to rabble rouse, number two. And number three, I love that team so much. So, oh my gosh, please. Favorite live event, probably The Outsiders on Broadway. I already talked about it. Just the choreography of the fight scenes, the songs I very much enjoyed, the actors being great, use of set and set design. So highly recommend. And I think finally, human rights topic. I just finished reading The Black Butterfly by Lawrence T. Brown. And this was something that came up because community service center called St. Francis Neighborhood Center, I think, which offers programs for after school and tutoring and things like that, and has like book bag, you know, giveaways, things like they came in on community service day and they were housed in my room. So I got to listen to them talk about it twice. And so different things were popping up. They were talking about East and West Baltimore. And I was like, I have no context. Can you explain to me what this means? And, you know, connecting that, oh, this is like, so basically we're talking about white flight and redlining. Like, yeah, this is what has happened. So first of all, I hope in 2025 to actually start volunteering with them. They want consistency, but just like an hour a week, I think shouldn't be too bad, and tutoring someone. So I'm excited to do that and give back to this new community that I'm living in. but they recommended this book because it gives you that history of the breakdowns of the Black Butterfly. If you look at what Baltimore looks like, kind of east and west, and just squeezing Black people in and forcing poverty upon them. And then there are white L's about it, that there are these affluent white centers. And so how to fix that and how to provide or create racial equity. And I appreciated that Brown talks not only about what the current state is and how it got there, but also like really practical ways of fixing it, which of course will require a lot of work. And like, it all makes sense, but it's like, oh my gosh, can we do this? Please, can like people make an effort to try to fix some of these things? But like I said, again, I think learning about my home and now having context for things, because I might have been reading about in some of my other anti-racist literature about Maryland, about Baltimore. But when you're not living in a place, it doesn't necessarily connect with you as much. And so now it's like, oh, okay. So it's very interesting. So I would say, yeah, I highly recommend reading that, whether you live in Baltimore or not. I think it certainly serves other communities. He talks a lot about Baltimore specifically, but he does bring up other places like Detroit and Flint and Chicago. I'm trying to think, maybe Atlanta too. So there are other places and might speak to you as well. So those are my tops, and I would love to hear, if you so desire, what your number ones were for 2024 in any or all of the categories. And yeah, hope for 2025. I've not seen very many movies, and we're getting close to, you know how I like to watch all the Best Picture nominees, and I'm like, I don't know that I've seen any of the, I don't know what they're going to be. I feel like I've not seen anything that would be considered a Best Picture nom. So I'm definitely going to probably be watching a lot of movies leading up to the Oscars. I mean, Gladiator 2 would probably be. Wicked I have yet to see, just because I'm still a bit annoyed that it's 2.5 hours and it's like part one. It might be 3 hours. I don't know, but why? Why can't it just be one part? But anyways, yes. So send me your best of. I do have some listener emails, which technically it's coming from YouTube on the previous episode. That's episode 252 and part one.
Mail time.
Mail time. Mail time.
The mail's here. Come on.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
First off, from Donovan, he says, I actually didn't consider whether this would be suitable for new readers to Batgirl, Cassandra Cain, and that's a good thought to have starting off. I'd actually say it's probably not and squarely meant for Cass fans who are all pretty happy, but she never even takes her mask off, which is interesting. It definitely operates like it's picking up where her 2000 to 2006 series ended. And that was based off of my question of, is this new Cassandra Cain series new reader friendly? I felt like it was not. And so Donovan, that I would say is practically her number one fan, agrees. He also comments, at what point exactly did Babs retake her spot as the Birds of Prey leader? Was that lost in the quick time skip to the story? So that's interesting that you consider that. And I know there are a couple other comments that you consider that to be the case, because within that issue, it's clear to me that Dinah is still the leader, because she is the one that talks to Barda and tries to settle her. She tells Grace and Onyx to fight Barda for, you know, spar with her. And then she also talks to Sin and tells her that she's going to stay out of this mission. So I feel like in words as well as actions, and even in that kitchen scene with Barda says, you know, you are a good leader, kind of to reassure her. So I don't necessarily see that. However, I can see where you might have seen it, given those scenes between the two. So I wonder if this is just a flaw of My Girl Babs' character, in that when she is in the room with other people or with Dinah, that her, oh my gosh, I'll use a Roman virtue, her dignitas kind of supersedes everybody else's. And so it seems like she is the leader in this situation. And I think even Dinah, because of Dinah's respect and love for Babs, might also defer to her. But Dinah is the leader of this. So that should not have happened, though that might be, yeah, I think that might just be a character situation. And I that's probably not even a flaw. I don't think that Babs is technically like trying to take over or be insubordinate to Dinah. I feel like also that's a partnership, but maybe Babs would defer to Dinah and say like, oh no, Dinah's the leader. Don't think that I am. But yeah, her dignitas is just so large that maybe it seems like she is the leader. But you'll have to tell me in this current issue if you feel like it's the same way, because I didn't. Because there are only a couple interactions and then Dinah goes off on her mission with the squad. So I don't know. And then also Harry, under the pseudonym Bagels After Midnight, says hiding Big D under a bushel. And then Big D says more like locked behind a cellar. So as because I said I could have invited Big D onto the show, but basically I just ran out of time. Didn't have a lot of time to begin with. So there you go. Thank you. Remember, you can always, yes, you can post comments to the YouTube, or you can write in backrolltheoracle@gmail.com. I'm going to take my break now. When I come back, I will do a full review of Batgirl Volume 6, Number 2, and Birds of Prey Volume 5, Number 16. But first, Zias's Radio Hour, featuring my number one song of 2024, Pretty Vicious by The Struts. See you soon.
watching.
You can be pretty vicious. I know you love it cause I see what you do. Hold on to myself when I'm under your spell. Cause you're pretty, pretty, pretty. Yeah, you can be pretty vicious. I know you love it. I see what you do. Hold on to myself under your spell. You're pretty. Yeah, you're pretty. Pretty vicious.
Welcome back. You can see we've got Batgirl number two, and I really liked this cover, which felt like some Mike Grell going on here. And also, I was trying to figure out the symbolism of all of this because it looks like there's maybe a crane in the background. Then I thought, is it a crane? Because I see an eye, or is it smoke? What's going on here? What's the symbolism? And then you've got Batgirl, and Batgirl kind of has the style, her ears and the shape of the mask as the Batman. Do you remember that? I feel like that's an underrated TV show. I love that cartoon. But anyways, yeah, highly. I love that particular cover. Okay, so this is Batgirl Volume 6, Number 2, Mother Part 2 of 6. Writer Tate Bromble, artist Takeshi Miyazawa, colorist Mike Spicer. With Lady Shiva gravely wounded and Batgirl refusing to join her mother's cause, the two seek refuge in the... Oh, okay. I thought, is this what happened? The two seek refuge in the unlikeliest of places while the mysterious unburied continue to hunt them, just as their deadly leader finally emerges from the shadows. Lives are at stake, but it wouldn't be a killer face-off without some casualties. So I do like how we are now giving, because the unlikeliest of places is this kitchen restaurant thing. I like that we're giving Cass some supporting characters now, because I think that is the way to really cement a lead into their own story and to show that they're going to be around permanently. Because if this were a limited series, why are we bothering? But here we're also... we are giving her that support as well as potentially some history, though by the end of this, because the kindly grandmother, Lady Babao, she might be dead. I'm not sure. But it's interesting. We've not seen this person before, which I verified with Big D. But just to know that, I guess when she first came to the city as a young whippersnapper, Cass was visiting. And she is called Kitty Cat by Babao there. And I don't think that Shiva has such trivial human emotions such as jealousy, but it is interesting to have this conversation between this woman that was almost like a surrogate saying, you know, you must be proud. And Shiva's just like, I guess you knew my daughter, but not, because I think in other maybe more humanistic characters, they might feel a jealousy of like, you know, you bonded with my daughter, but where was Shiva? It's not like she even has a right to that jealousy. I do feel like Babao is an Aunt May sort of character, but she definitely She's not serving out the wheat cakes. She is working on some wounds, which I'm sure she's helped Cass out a great deal. And then she is also a competent fighter, which we see later. And to Donovan's point, as well as something that I had seen and thought about previously in that the first issue is that, yeah, Cass is not removing her mask. She is Batgirl. She's not Cassandra Cain, I think, in this particular book. Clearly, Shiva is still hiding something because, you know, she gives this history of the Blue Monks, but she doesn't explain because we're finding out that vengeance, hot vengeance in their hearts. Why? Why would they be going after Shiva? What has she done to bring upon that vengeance? So it's true to form that she'd be withholding things. Why Cass doesn't ask? She does say, if true, why now? So there are, and then that's interrupted. So I think we will, this is 2 of 6. So I think we'll find out at some point. Many shocking things happen at the end, I will say. Obviously, this fight is crazy. There's the kindly grandmother character getting really mollywopped. Thank you. Hashtag Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Hashtag Donatello. So I would say, yeah. So the first shocking thing is how wrecked Cassandra gets here. We can argue. I think other people who are more knowledgeable of Cassandra can tell me whether you feel like this should have happened to her beyond story reasons, right? Story reasons, we don't want her to overcome the enemy in the beginning. We want that conflict. We want that tension to last us for 6 issues. Okay. But character-wise, does this make sense? I would actually, given what I know about her, I feel like no. I mean, thinking of the people that she has fought, the metahumans that she disobeyed her father fighting, I feel like she should be able to take this guy down. But that's just my potentially less educated knowledge about Cass, but I rely on the experts to see whether you agree or disagree with that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that she complies with Shiva and they leave because, yeah, here we have Cass really struggling with because she is abandoning, as she is saying, not only Babel, but then because they get on this train, she also feels like she is abandoning her city and her family. And the fact that obviously she must, we can point to the reason of she must be so messed up that she's not in her right mind. And so, of course, she has to go along with it. But I just feel like the Cass that I know, just in any circumstance, Cass would fight back against this and she would stay and push Shiva away. So it is kind of nuts. And then here, this is the moment, which is really interesting, of her removing her mask and looking back. So this, the body posture and the symbolism of this is really powerful. I will also point to, I found this very interesting. I always like naming people and the list and the order and preference and things of names. And so family, connecting to family, who are the people that she is abandoning? Steph is first, Bruce and Babs. So I love that those three are there. Hyuk, hyuk, yeah, I'm sure Donovan is laughing that Bruce gets a tier above Barbara. But I mean, what the shippers rejoice that Stephanie is the one that is first named, which you can either say they're just friends or maybe. Wouldn't that be amazing if Tate Bromble was the one who pulls the trigger and suddenly there's some sort of relationship, romantic relationship between the two of these? I don't know. So yes, I think that how I feel about this is basically how I feel about the other one. Fight scenes, we get a little bit of knowledge about the unburied, but and I guess enough to satisfy us, but not a whole lot. And I think the biggest stuff happens just at this very end where Cass and Shiva, I mean, they're a team now, and she is being taken away from this safe space, and now she's going to be heavily reliant on Shiva. And whether this is Shiva's plan or not, now she is at her will, I would say, not of her own volition, but just circumstantially. So we'll see what this looks like with Cass outside of this particular city. So I would say, yeah, it's I would say that's a stronger than fine issue. Nothing's necessarily blowing me away yet, but we will, this is 2 out of 6 in an arc, in the opening arc at that. So we will, you know, we will give grace. So I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10 mother-daughter spats. And now we shall move on to Birds of Prey. Volume 5, number 16, Bird Undercover Part 3. Writer Kelly Thompson, artist Sami Basri, and colors Adriana Lucas. Amazon's in trouble. Did you ever wonder what happens when small bat gets big? And whatever will Big Barda have to say about it? Meanwhile, 5 Amazon's lives are on the line, and oh, the entire Birds of Prey field team is caught in a twist no one could have anticipated. Okay. Love the colors on the cover. I think that that is honestly what makes it. I will say that it is partially misleading, if only that Cass does not have that costume in this particular issue. I wonder what it would have been like to have her as, it was Shen, wasn't it? And on the cover, I guess it would have confused people. And so they had to do the Cass advertising right there. But it, yeah, I mean, have, you know, that hot Cass looking character, I think would be interesting. But it is true that there are people that are captured and kind of looking like that, even though that is not the uniform that they have, which I will talk about later. So I generally comment on the art being amazing. I will say that especially in the fight sequence towards the end, that I enjoy the art, and in particular some of these, you know, when Dinah is really showcasing her power. I love that in particular. That last sequence here with a roided up Cass staring down upon Barda. So there's some amazing, amazingly designed and panels and their layouts I really appreciate. So we are this, I talked about this before, we are really being hit hard with the, as I call it, Cass bias. It's coming at us. I don't know where it's coming from. Is it just Kelly Thompson? Is it like we're being hit hard because Cass is going to be leaving us soon and just being in her own book? I don't know what's going on. But let's see, what does this say? The thing with Cass being in jeopardy is that, and this is the narration of Dinah. The thing with Cass being in jeopardy is that it shouldn't be that stressful. She's the best. But then you remember just how much you like her, and it's hard not to worry anyways. And it's just really interesting how all of this is coming out in the focus and everything. And especially from Dinah, because I can imagine this sentimentality coming from Barbara. But in my opinion, Dinah and Cass don't have that close of a relationship. It very much is a leader to a team member versus, you know, Barbara being a big sister to a little sister. So I don't know where exactly this is coming from, but I feel like this is author insert in my opinion. I do like which I guess was really at the beginning, the Mission Impossible style stealth sequences that are happening, and Cass just using her smarts and what she has available to her in order to succeed in this really almost impossible situation. I also appreciate art-wise, there's some more her being an event and crawling up, crawling down, using her whole body to maneuver. I also love that we never forget about the bracelet, and that the artist puts it, shows us in a way that we don't forget about it, and it harkens back to what that bracelet is and what its original purpose is, both subtly as well as in your face, as this bottom panel here. I enjoyed once they happened, let's see here, once they actually came to on the mission. So now we are finally here using a boom tube. This bottom panel here with Barda, run cowards, for if Barda touches you, you will beg for the sweet release of death. And I just love how over the top Barda is, and this totally makes sense. I also love that Dinah has to rein her in because Bart is kind of out of control here. And Dinah's saying, you know, no killing. Let's do something smarter. And so she actually, as a leader, comes up with this smart idea of using that gas to their advantage and just removing the other people's masks in order to incapacitate them rather than having to expend their energy unnecessarily in case there is a second or even third round with all of these people. I like how all these lab experiments, as I'll call them, have the same uniform, which we can kind of, this weird getup. It kind of reminds me of the female Furies. It's also gross because it reminds me of Arcade, whenever he kidnapped the X-Men, how they might have been in civvies and then they wake up because he, like, I don't know, drugged them. Something happened. Then they wake up in his little game and they're in their costumes or in something else, because it means that Cass and potentially all the others were at some point stripped down while they were unconscious and given these clothings. So, you know, I don't know how many, maybe I think about it too much, but yeah, it's like when a costume is switched, you wonder when that happened, and it's unlikely that the person wearing the costume was the one to change it. And so it's just super vulnerable and makes me uncomfortable. So yeah, we will see what happens at the end. This will be interesting, obviously, because of the emotional connection between Barda and Cassandra. There's obviously going to be some sort of fight. I think this fight will be more equal than it would have if Cass were quote unquote regular sized, at least in terms of physicality, because I think how Cass would fight Barda as regular Cass would be different than now, because now it's going to be heavy force, whereas I think she had to do finesse, if, you know, as regular Cass. So it'll be interesting to see what this particular fight is. I'm sure Barda will be like, no, let us not fight. But we will see, because it says next, Big Barda versus Small Bat. I thought that this was a really good issue. Yeah, not a lot of bad screen time, which is sad, but she's doing her tech thing, which she seemed a bit weak on the tech thing, having some troubles, more troubles than I would expect her to, but that's okay. Sometimes we have bad days, but I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 roided out casses. Now it is time for Stella's Dungeon of Smut, brought to you by Hornacek Fried Calamari Sticks. And I think I'll recommend two. One that I really liked was Between the Lines by Olivia Hale. And that was One Night Stand, and then they see each other again, which, you know, can be awkward. And it's a billionaire person who owns a media company that ruined the FMC, the female main character's life, and kind of the dangers of social media and things. I thought that it was really good, both in terms of the romance, but also the depth of the story and, yeah, social media and being a reality TV star and things like that. And also Penalized Love by Emery Page. I didn't like it as much as Sidelined Love, which I really enjoyed. But this one, I'm going to recommend it because the lead character has PCOS, and I don't know that I have ever had a character have PCOS. Wait, let me think about this. Yes. Whew. Okay. I was like, am I misrepresenting? So PCOS, also known as polycystic ovary syndrome. And this is a hormonal disorder causing enlarged ovaries with small cysts on the outer edges. And just, yeah, unfortunately, the tough things that women with that will go through. And so to have a lead character talk about that and work through that, I thought was really amazing. And I guess other romance, if we're looking for a Yuri romance, a queer romance, The Snowball Effect by Haley Cass, not my favorite of hers. And these are characters that were side characters in a previous story, but because I feel like I've not had many queer romances on that recommendation, I will give that to you nonetheless. And whenever Haley Cass comes out with the book, it's always like 500 or 600 pages. So that one took me a little while to get through, but I appreciate it. But definitely, yeah, slow burns from her. And then finally, my literature recommendations. You'll Be the Death of Me by Karen McManus. Not my favorite. And in fact, it might be, this is saying something, but it might be my least favorite of the ones of hers that I've read. I think I have one left that I need to read of hers, but it's, I mean, still good. I gave it a 3 stars, but still The Cousins. I highly recommend that one. And then, as you know, I just finished Black Butterfly, The Harmful Politics of Race and Space in America by Lawrence T. Brown, which I gave 5 stars out of 5. And those are my literature recommendations. And that's it for this episode. Remember, you can send any questions or comments to backrolltheoracle@gmail.com. Like the show on Facebook or follow it on Twitter @backrolltheoracle. Subscribe to the show on YouTube for an uncut version, as you're seeing, and you can see images as well. Follow the Batman Universe on Facebook and Twitter as well, and support the Batman Universe by subscribing to Patreon. Look up my music choices if you're interested in them. And once again, thanks to milehighcomics.com for sponsoring Backroll the Oracle, the Barda. What? The Barda. Woo! What a slip. Backroll the Oracle, the Barbara Gordon podcast. There we go. And I hope you all have a wonderful set of holidays. I hope that it snows where you are, but safe snow, that meaning that you can still get to the grocery store and it's not a snowpocalypse. And I would all like you to, you know, support the bills. I don't think that's asking too much, is it? Yeah, I feel like team says, you know, the Bills are our bitterest enemies. Whereas I feel like the Bills have enemies. You know, I hate the Dolphins. I hate the Cowboys. I don't like the Patriots. That's like personal, but yeah, I don't know. Does anyone say like, I hate the Bills? It seems very odd. But anyways, yeah, go Bills. So yes, until next time, fly on, Babs lovers.
Just plain Barbara Gordon, masquerading for a lark as she rides into the night on her special Batgirl cycle. Who knows? Is the dynamic duo destined to become the triumphant trio? Only time will tell us more about this dazzling daredevil.
I love a happy ending, don't you?